Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Once again, welcome to the Tiebreaker Radio Show. We back on, we live. It's been a good week in sports, man. The NFL offseason in full swing. We got the NBA playoffs happening right now. Let's see, Detroit and Cleveland still in the fourth. 3 minutes, 30 seconds to go, 95-91 Cleveland. Let's see, the Spurs wrapped up their series with Memphis. It's been a good week, man. We ain't got nobody in the chat yet, waiting for them to call in. See, I'm a ramble. So, again, the Spurs wrapped up their series with the Grizzlies. We got the Clippers and Blazers, 2-1. Cavaliers look like they're about to pull this one out, so I think they're going to be sweeping the Pistons here. 2-2 on the Pacers and Raptors. Golden State Warriors won tonight, although they lost Steph Curry. They up 3-1. What was that last night? Oh, here we go. Here we go. First one in there. Pause. What's up with it, Ryan? 5975. Speak on it, brother.
Not much, man. Thank you for the introduction. Just watching a good game right now. The Cavs about to get their sweep on up here in Detroit. Get rid of these bums off the court.
Right. Do that. They make it in Detroit, making it trying to look like they giving them a fight.
Yeah, they putting up a little bit of something.
You know, I tried to read. So I read something earlier though, when somebody was trying to say that the Memphis Grizzlies giving the Spurs a fight really was gonna help the Spurs be the reason why they get to the championship. I'm like, what fight was y'all seeing?
There was no fight. The Spurs set a record. They had four games with 20 or more points that they won by. Like, there was no fight.
I've never seen a coach crying after a first-round loss. I don't care if it was
never,
this week. I was,
never.
It was that bad. I think people are just fans of the Spurs at the time. All right. I think that's Mike on the line, 6011. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how y'all doing? It's your boy, Mr. No Street Claret. Just remember to put some respect on my name when you mention me, though.
Get the first mute of the day for that one, Young Bird, man. But welcome,
right.
Mike, man. I got you back, bro. What's up? What do you think about these games so far, these first round games?
Oh, man, it's pretty good so far, you know. I was just watching the Cavs game and watching Reggie Jackson blow any chances they had at taking this one victory. Bro, pretty much is all about what I expected it to be so far.
Okay. Well, leaving basketball alone, fellas, first topic I wanted to get into, bro, was I think we were talking about Josh Norman, a real big deal off season for the NFL, and I think it might, you know, change and shake up the NFC. Josh Norman had franchise tag rescinded from by the Carolina Panthers. I think it's I think they were supposed to be giving him $13 million for this year, just for this season. But we know with the franchise tag, it's 1 year guaranteed. Josh Norman is 28 years old. I think most of us are 28, 29, so he about our age, you know. Probably this is his first big check, you know, as an athlete. We all know, you know, athletes for football really don't last that long. So, and then the Panthers picked him up, $75 million guaranteed. I think he gets $13 million in year three. The first couple of years is $15 million and $15 million and $6.5 million. He got a $15 million signing bonus. It's ridiculous. But I think that a lot of people are saying that automatically makes a Redskins a contender. What y'all thinking about this, I guess, the whole ordeal? The Panthers, first of all, rescinding the franchise tag in the first place after already saying it, and then the him signing with the Redskins. Let's start with you, Mike.
I'm not to be that guy, but I think it's $50 million guaranteed and $75 million for the whole deal. And then I think – I don't know. As far as I'm looking right now, I think – I think this year is going to be like a show-me year for Josh Norman, because I really think that the Panthers overall made him a great – an elite player. But I don't know, if you put him to another team that's not an elite defense, is he going to be that guy? So I look at this as, like, on the Panthers' end, I see where they wanted to stay strong with their price, because I was reading something, like, even on Wednesday, he had called, like, right after they filled out the paperwork to cancel out the franchise tag, he had called to, like, even agree on a deal for the 13-5. But they was stuck with the 10 and 12, and he ain't know it was that deep, because he was going to hold out to the offseason, but he didn't know the Panthers was that deep far as, like, no, we're good on you. So, but far as that deal with the Redskins signing him that quickly, I think that's a great pickup for them, and we'll see what he can do.
Okay, all right. Hey, we got a new player in the house, 8627. Speak on it, brother. Tell me what you think about the Josh Norman deal, man. Him being the franchise tag being rescinded and signed with the Redskins.
Hey, man. First off, I want to say, man, when you you know, you call me out, man, you respect my name, man. I appreciate that, man. You could plan around with my name. You respect my name out here, man. So this is Tate. Y'all already know who it is.
Why are you coming at the host? Why are you coming at the radio host?
Hey, man, I'm coming out. Hey, that's how it is, man.
Come at it here, y'all. That way. You ain't say nothing to Big Meat.
Just radio guy.
You ain't pull up on Meats like that.
Hey, no, real. The only way I feel about it, pretty much the same way Mike said. And Mike took my little tidbit steal for the show about that. He called in to sign for it, and they had already pretty much signed the paperwork. Like, yeah, bro, we already moved on. But I mean, I think it's a great, yeah, I think it's a great pickup for Washington, for real, because of the fact that, I mean, that was a great year that he had. I don't know how much longer he's gonna be able to do it, for real. I mean, I do think that age plays a large factor, and at the end of the day, man, Father Tom is gonna catch up to everybody, and I really don't think he got 5 years in him to be, you know, that good of a player to, you know, get that type of money. But that's just me. He could prove me wrong. But at the same time, I do feel like the Panthers knew that, and that's why they wasn't trying to give him as much as he wanted, because they felt like, dude, you're only going to be really this good for about maybe one, maybe two more years, and then you're going to start falling off. The only good cornerback in the league that has lasted as long is, what, Revis? Like, and that's about uh-huh. it. So, you know, if you want to go by history, you know, you want to go by what Father Tom says. I mean, I think it was a bold move on Redskins' part, but, hey, they got money to blow. But I think it was a smart move on the Carolina Panthers' part because, hey, they see what it usually goes down to.
Yeah, they said it really was the Carolina Panthers GM. That's his philosophy, not to really stand good on DBs, trying to be so good, because it's really about the front seven. As we've seen, your boy Luke Kuechly, part of that front seven, which they had, you know, even though Josh Norman did really good in that backfield, I mean, he really only had two of them back early, and he really pretty much shut down them. But it was that front seven that really locked on. Ryan, really, what you think about Josh Norman there really quick?
I mean, I kind of, you know, I feel the same way. Like, I've never really been a huge fan of the whole, like, giving cornerbacks so much money. Just over time, history shows, like, cornerbacks haven't been that – the cornerbacks and running backs are really those people, when they have a breakout year, they reach and try to get a long-term deal because they know, like, we got to try to make our money, because those are just two positions that don't last that long. You don't really see elite-type players. Like he was saying, Revis is the only person. Like, Revis is the only person. He's the second-best cornerback I've seen in my life. Like, Deion was the first, and then Revis is the second. Like, he's lasted for so long. And then with the
and Norman, Revis a tackle.
Yeah, and Revis, he does a lot more. And then I think with Norman, he is more so a system type player. Like, I don't think that he's nowhere near how Revis is. You could put Revis on any team, and he go handle what he has to handle. I don't think Norman's that same type of player. But like I said, I mean, it's a good pickup for the Redskins, but I definitely understand where the Panthers are coming from as far as not wanting to sign him long term and give him that type of money that he wants.
Okay. Well, let me just I'll throw out some numbers of some quarterbacks. I mean, some corners is making more than were making more than I guess the $13 million that they were going to give him. You know, we got Darrell Revis making $14 million. We got Patrick Peterson making $14 million. Richard Sherman making $14 million. And then Tremaine Johnson from the Rams making $13 million. Joe Hayden for the Browns making $13.5 million. I mean, I guess when you look at it, he is 28, but so is Richard Sherman's 27. He has a total of 26 interceptions over his career. Darrell Revis is the oldest out of them. He's about 30. He has 28 interceptions over his career. Patrick Peterson up there, 17 over his career. Even a kid, how you say his name, Talib from the Broncos, he has a 30 over his career, and he's 28 as well. Mm-hmm. Josh Norman, only 7 interceptions over a 4-year career. So, I mean, like Chase said, I guess I can't really blame the Carolina Panthers. They did their research. Okay. All right. I mean, we jumping off of the NFL. Go ahead.
Before we jump off, I also wanted to say it's like this year with the Redskins. Like, if you look at their season coming up. Like, this is going to be, like, his show-out year because, like, their first game, they play the Steelers, and he got to go up against Antonio Brown. And the second game is Dez Bryant with Dallas. And then the third game is the anticipated New York Giants against Odell Beckham. So either he can show out to be like Revis or he can end up being like old boy from Oakland that went to Philly with all that money, Asamoah. If I said it,
that was your boy
bad.
Too.
It was.
Yeah, and Asamoah was. I mean, but Asamoah still did well in Philly a little bit. I mean, but yeah,
no,
that's
he didn't.
Really
he was trash.
Not for that contract.
He was
not for that. Not for that money.
He wasn't. Yeah. But no, really good point. Really good point. That is true. I was looking at that.
He
got
ran off
the Steelers
twice.
Cowboys. He probably got and then he got the Giants. Odell Beckham. He got the Browns. I mean, he got to come to Cleveland. That's got to be bad. The Ravens, Eagles, Lions, Bengals, AJ Green, Vikings. Man, yeah. I mean, he's probably going to, he has to play Dez Bryant twice. Then he has to go up against the Cardinals again, which you know how their offense is going in. And then against the Panthers on December the 19th, right before Christmas. Merry Christmas. So, yeah, this will be a proven year for him. We'll see if he worth that $15 million. He is the highest paid cornerback in the NFL right now. Like Mike said, if he plays out 3 years, he should be guaranteed $51 million. All right, moving on to the next topic, NBA. And I think one in particular, we were talking about fouls being given after the game was over. A lot of people were saying something towards the Isaiah Thomas hand swing, I guess, on Dennis Schroeder's head. That should have been a foul, I guess. Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook were assessed flagrant fouls or technical fouls at the end of the Mavericks game for a little scuffle. Kevin Durant was kicked out of the game on a technical foul, a flagrant 2 foul against Derek Anderson. Who was it? Not Derek Anderson. What's his name? But in the middle of the game, it was just the last 90 seconds, Justin Anderson. He said that nobody was looking to injure anyone. But I think me and Murray was talking about it earlier, Mike was talking about it earlier, that it's real weak that the league officers are reviewing those flagrant fouls and trying to give them up at the end of the game. I mean, this is unprecedented, and we always talk about how we used to see those old NBA games, you know, where they're basically whacking each other. Nobody left the game, you know. We got tape of people punching people. I mean, what do y'all feel about these flagrant fouls, like, happening after the game being caught? Do y'all think it's bad for the game at all? We'll start with Ryan.
I mean, this is my biggest thing with the whole calling the foul after the case is, like, the flagrant foul I really have a problem with. I have a problem with it because when they bring in the whole replay thing and bringing the people that's in Secaucus, New Jersey, that's what they're supposed to be there for. So if you can't call it during the game, how you gonna call it after the game? That makes no sense to me. Like that, if that's the case, then it really just makes the whole purpose of you bringing out your little cameras and everything and wanting to replay everything kind of pointless. Like, how do you not? It was instances where it wasn't even a foul called on the play at all. So not even just saying like, okay, someone got fouled, and then you look back and like, okay, that was a flagrant, and it shouldn't have been a flagrant, you know, or that was a foul, and it shouldn't have been a foul. It was no fouls called at all, and then they call a flagrant.
Right.
To me, that just doesn't read right for the league, and it kind of makes things look foolish. On a side note, the Cavs just won. Sweet, get them bums out of there. But, yeah.
I've seen that. Hey, Tay Bear, how you feel about the flagrant fouls being called or technical fouls called after the games are over by the league office?
Oh, well, you know, first I want to start off with the biggest news story of tonight, basketball-wise, is the Lakers just fired Byron Scott. Go Lakers. So I just want to throw that out the way. And now on to the foul topic. I don't have no problem with it. For real, I think that it's a good way. It's really a way for the league to say, yo, we messed up. We didn't call the right call during the play. We messed up. And then, I mean, I didn't do my research as far as the flagrant fouls and the technical fouls. But, of course, if you get so many within a couple of games, you know, it's an ejection. So I really think it's a way for them really just to keep up with that. Like, hey, what you did, that wasn't right. This is your, you know, you still get your punishment for it, technically. So I really don't have no issue with it. I really think, you know, hey, it ain't no way you're going to get every single call every single time correctly, you know, especially with the refs that we got nowadays. So, you know, for the league to go over it and say, hey, we're going to assess you this technical foul or this flagrant foul, you know, after the game, it still counts to your total of how many you can get before you're going to get ejected. You know, you're not going to just get away with it now. So I don't have a problem with it. I think it's, like I said, for waiting for them to say, all right, bro, hey, you know, we still watching you out here. We still got eyes on you.
But you don't think that's weak? You don't think that's weak, like that's bad for the game? I mean, it's because it's after the game. The game is already over. I'm a player. I'm already getting ready for it. And the next game, and all of a sudden, oh, some stuff from the last game, which is already over, which I usually, you know, it's usually over, you know, and now they're looking back into it because they have the benefit of the replay, and now it's actually affecting the outcomes of games, you know, whether players or not get to play in the next game, how they have to act and handle themselves during the game because of that. You don't find that a little bit, you don't think that takes away a little bit from the competition.
I do, but at the same time, that's just as weak as, you know, other things that happen in the league and they don't call it. You know, if you see something that didn't happen, you will feel some kind of way. Like, if you know, if like, let's say, for example, Golden State, you know, the Houston game, they said that James Harden had pushed off. He had an extra.
I was just about to go there.
So, you know, it's just like stuff like that. If you a Houston Rockets fan, you know, or you a Golden State fan and you know, it would have swung the other way if they would have called that, like you might feel some kind of way right now because they didn't go back and say, hey, you know what, that was offensive foul. Let me take that win from y'all. Bam, now we ain't go to Golden State. Series moves on. So, you know, it goes both ways. I do think that it is in some fashion weak that they do it afterwards. But I do think that I have to applaud them myself because they're not sitting there and turning a blind eye completely to what happened and saying, oh, well, you know, hey, it wasn't called during the game. Move on. Like, no, they understand that, hey, we messed up on this. This is our way of somehow trying to rectify our mistake.
Okay, all right. We get it, I guess. Clean up house. Mike, man, what you think about these fouls, man, these after-the-game flagrants and technicals?
Listening to John, Mr. Tay, listening to him, you know what I mean, he kind of stepped on where I was going a little bit, and I kind of agree both with that. It's,
is weak on one end, but then on the other end, I guess it is all right on a fan standpoint. I believe that it is weak because on a professional level, it makes your referees look like they don't know what they're doing to let them call a game. And then the next day, the two-minute review team, 24 hours later, say, oh, yeah, they missed this call and this call. And, like, you know what I mean? Now he get a technical, and if he get another technical, you know, he got to sit out a game. So, like, that makes it, like, okay, yeah, that's good for the building up of the list, but it also makes your referees look bad. And if you use just, like, the Warriors in the Houston game, like, I don't think it was a push-off from James Harden. But if they go on record on ESPN and say, yeah, it was a push-off, like, should the game go back and now it's a sweep, like he was saying, or, like, well, ain't nothing we could do about that one. And then if you watch the game today, like, the referees was calling every touch a foul. Like, for a second, even though they were doing, like, hack a Howard or hack the dude from the Warriors, like, it went from a 5 minutes in the second quarter to 20 minutes later to get to 2 minutes in the second quarter because they was calling every tidbit of a foul because the referees was trying to make up to keep their jobs. So, like, I think we're on a delay. But, like, if you look, like, if the NBA is doing that, then now the referees got to step up and do this to make it look like, yeah, we are doing our job here. And now it's just all like everybody trying to scramble to be the best that they can be now and calling everything when it makes the game look bad altogether.
Well, it's a lot of money on the line. It's a lot of, you know, a lot of fans pay a lot of money for it. So I guess you will want to get it right. I understand that argument. There are some things, like there was a New York Times story on flagrant fouls being called against German Land. I guess they were trying to say that German Land doesn't get enough foul calls, or they don't call him enough because he's Asian or whatnot. I have this: the NBA response to a New York Times story on flagrant fouls called on Charlotte Hornets guard Jeremy Lin. With respect to data over the last three seasons, Mr. Lin ranked 21st amongst all players in number of drives to the basket with 1,537. While he has not drawn a flagrant foul in that time, neither have other guards known for their driving ability, such as Reggie Jackson with 2,000, Tony Parker with 1,907, Tyreek Evans 1,969, Ty Lawson with 1,800, Kyrie Irving with 1,600, and Victor Oladipo with 1,500 as well. Conversely, Mr. Lin has drawn more foul and fouls on long drives than any of those previously listed players has drawn fouls, and seventh highest rate among 23 players with more than 1,500 drives. So it looks like they're putting their money and their stats to it. So, I mean, even with this, you know, this again was a response to the New York Times story. But again, it looks like Tay and Mike was probably saying they are putting the money behind it, I guess, to, you know, make the game more accountable and I guess safe in that regard. But I do think, like Ryan said, I agree with Ryan, it do take away from the competition. It really affects the game. For instance, Kevin Durant is being they're thinking about that Kevin Durant may miss the fifth game of the playoffs. Now, I don't care what you say, that foul wasn't that hard that Kevin Durant, I mean, if he wasn't going to call it in the game, you know, I mean, he did get ejected. But, you know, he's about to miss a game. You know, that's going to affect the series, and that's definitely going to affect the next series. You're talking about if Kevin Durant is in, they possibly close this series out. If Kevin Durant is out, that could give the Mavericks the edge to come back in the series and maybe prolong the series.
I mean,
anybody?
But
I got everybody in mind.
Let me say that, though. I mean, but what if they had called that foul during the game? You know, then it would have been the same outcome. So it's just like, you know, why worry about the fact that it was called technically after the game? I mean, it was, in their eyes, it was the right call, you know, and it would have been, you know, the right call regardless of the fact. So it's like, really, what's the big difference between the two? You know, he committed the foul, he got called on the foul. He got, you know, the next foul, now you eject it. You know, so it's like, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of
No. Kevin Durant was for that swing. That swing, he got an immediate flagrant too.
Yeah.
He got tossed him a lot.
Right, but before that, he had already had the foul right? He already had another.
Oh, no, no, no.
Foul the game before.
No, yeah, they but they didn't give it. Yeah, he had a technical foul the game before, but they gave him an escalated technical foul by the bench, I think, too, for Russell Westbrook. I don't know, but he had one before. I think they're really doing this to try to tighten this series up. And saying there's been a lot of complaining on both sides that, you know, the game is getting out of hand.
I mean, my thing is how can a foul be so bad that you go give somebody a technical after the fact, but or you saying get them a flagrant after the fact, but you didn't do it during the game? Like, that's how I will never be able to wrap my head around that. Like, if it was such a bad foul, how can it not be caught during the game?
I think that's what we're moving towards. So maybe not more so towards the Kevin Durant situation. He was giving
a flagrant. Yeah, not so the Kevin Durant, but the other ones, it was plays where it wasn't even a foul called on the play. But then after you think
and the James Harden foul.
Yeah,
those things.
It doesn't make sense. Like, you cannot tell me that a foul was so bad that nothing was caught on the court, but then after the fact it's a flagrant. That makes no sense whatsoever. And then if you saying like, oh, well, the league wants to make up for their mistakes. Well, they've been doing a whole lot of mistakes because this has been every series, every game, this whole playoff, every single game, this whole playoff, the league has had to go back and say that the refs made a mistake. Every single game, every series. That's too much. That's ridiculous.
I mean,
they might as well bring them temporary refs back. And they go do this.
Not temporary refs. No, I mean, but at the same time, like you can't sit here and say also that, you know, this isn't something that you probably wouldn't even do. You know, I don't even say myself, like, if I was reffing a game and I saw that, you know, something happened and I didn't blow my whistle on it, pause, and, you know, and then go ahead and, you know, later, you know, think about, oh, man, I should have called that foul. You know, it's like it's going to happen, you know, in the game.
No, I understand that, Tay, but think about you as a ref. I can understand you missing a call, but you would not miss a call that was so bad that somebody gets a flagrant one. Like, you're not going to
right.
That's outrageous. That's
some people may
wow.
not
want to
make that
call,
though.
Anybody going to miss a call, but not a flagrant one.
Some people might want to make
got,
that call,
they
that's,
got
that's
notes on the officiating for the last 2 minutes of the Hawks-Celtics game, the last 2 minutes of the Cavs-Pistons game on the 17th. So, you know, they were looking the last few minutes of the Mavericks Thunder's game on the 18th. So they are looking into it. You know, I guess what they're trying to do is they're trying to stop it from, you know, from things from escalating. Ever since, I guess, the Palace thing, you know, where it escalated. Like, Russell Westbrook got fired for saying speaking to a fan. It wasn't for anything he did, you know, got out of hand with the players or on the floor. They said it was for language towards the fan. You know, they are protecting the brand at this point. This is basically get in line. You know, these are, you know, hall rules. Hall rules, how to conduct yourselves when in the hall. You know, you can, we let y'all do this, we let y'all do that. You guys got commercials, we giving y'all money, giving y'all contracts. Y'all got to act like this. Y'all got to play like this. Okay, we got 90 seconds left live. I do want to speak to Jonte Allen on the drop for my Los Angeles Lakers. I did read that. At 11:04, Byron Scott. Yeah, I'm not respecting your name. I'm muting your name right now. Thanks for being disrespectful towards my Los Angeles Lakers. Byron Scott was fired after two seasons as a Los Angeles Lakers coach. But I got a question for you. Hey, who do you think? You think they got a shot at Luke Walton? Get my man Luke Walton. You think Luke Walton to answer? Former Lakers coming
all.
Back.
They can
not
get him, but I don't know why they don't want him.
I don't think he's stupid enough to be what he got.
Stupid.
Y'all can have Mark Jackson.
Oh, what man. Disrespectful. Disrespectful.
You got David Black right. Because the Knicks have refused that. They ain't getting him.
Terrible. Look, okay, so. Last topic of the day, I was hoping Misha was going to be able to speak on this, man, because he had a lot to say about it. Cleveland Browns, stay making headlines. This time for probably a good reason, really good reason.
Cleveland Browns traded their number 2 pick, which probably wasn't going to be a really good one. I still don't think so. I guess we'll see. Traded them to the Philadelphia Eagles for about 5 picks, was it? Philadelphia Eagles got the first-round pick, number 2 overall, a fourth-round pick in 2017. Cleveland Browns got the Phillies number 8 overall pick this year, their third-round pick, number 77 overall this year, number 100 overall in the fourth round this year, a 2017 first-round pick, and a 2018 second-round pick. So it was going. That's, you know, 6, you know, yeah, it was 5 for 2, rather. So I guess they're going with players instead of, you know, high players. What do y'all think about this Cleveland Browns pick? I guess trade with picks. We'll start with Tay.
I think it was a smart move on their part. I'm really seeing. I don't know. Every year I try to hold what I think about the Browns until they actually start doing stuff in the season. But so far I can't lie, man. They impressed me with the way that they're going about things. I do think that the trade was a good trade. No need to go at number 2. You know, especially drafting some quarterback that ain't worth it. I think that, you know, when they got the picks, they ended up being tied with San Francisco for the most number of picks in a draft. Now, granted, I can't remember what year this was, but it was not too long ago where they had like 5 or 6 picks in the draft, and they went with all their picks, and not one of those picks ended up being any type of franchise player. I think it was, matter of fact, it was the year that we got Trent Richardson. And the rest of the other guys that we got that year, none of them panned out to be what we wanted them to be. So, you know, that speaks to the front office not making good picks with the number of picks that they have throughout the draft. So I am still a little nervous about that to see if that's something that we got over the hump, you know, for. But I'm definitely happy with the way that they moved around with things, you know, trade away that number 2, you know, go for the number 8 and, you know, move on from there. I would hope that they would keep the number 8. I still want a high draft pick or a higher draft pick. But, you know, I do think that was a good way to go about it.
Okay. So, Browns going from number 2 to number 8. Really quick, Ryan, what you think about this trade with the Browns for the picks? Addition by addition, more picks is better.
Right. Pretty much. I mean, I really do. Like, this was actually one of the best things that I've seen the Browns do in a long time. And it's just because if you're not sold on a certain player, people always say, like, if you got the number 1, number 2 draft pick, 3 draft pick, that you should just pick somebody. But if you're not sold on somebody, or you know that it's other people that's thirsty, that want to move up, and you can get draft picks out of them, get the draft picks. It's rare to find, like, those real franchise-type players. Neither one of those quarterbacks, to me, would be franchise players. If either one of those quarterbacks end up having a great career, I don't think that anybody will come back on the Browns and say, oh, the Browns were so stupid for trading them. Because right now, nobody's saying that either one of these quarterbacks are going to be franchise quarterbacks except for the 2 dumb teams that traded up to try to get them. Other than them, nobody else is saying that. So I think it's a great move for the Browns. And I think they can, if they do it the right way, they can really get some key parts and really make at least some type of noise, bring some type of excitement to, you know, Cleveland.
Mike, good move by the Brownies. Yay, nay?
Indecisive right now because it is the Browns. So, you know, it's not the first time they traded down. And they've done that before, and they've also made dumb picks. So I would like to wait until after the draft before I make a personal opinion on how I feel about the Browns. And because if they don't draft anything, like, good, then, like, even though it's a rebuild team, supposedly a rebuild team, the owner is not going to tolerate losing consecutive years in a row, as you can see from before. Even though the owner, the people up there that was making the decisions were idiots, and the people that they got now is smart, But if they're still, if they still make, they're making smart decisions and it doesn't show out on the field, then you know the owner is about making money. So they're going to do what he got to do again. So, I mean, moving to number eight, I mean, I respect getting more picks, but if they don't make an elite decision on getting the best player available to help their team, then I think it was still pointless.
See, to me, I understand what Mike's saying, but like to me, as far as the topic being like, is the move good? The move is good by itself. Now, them what they do with their draft is a whole other topic. Like the move itself, like strategically, is excellent, but them drafting, that's a whole, then we gonna bring into the history of what the Browns do, and we know that's not always the best thing. Like, so that's where I come from. Is like the move itself was wonderful, but drafting is just where we gonna have to go from the drawing board.
But I wanna add something in to what Mike has said, because Mike, you said something about, you know, you don't think the owner is gonna tolerate losing, you know, multiple seasons because of consecutive seasons. I will say I think that is something that, you know, for lack of a better word, he will tolerate, because of the fact that he has stated multiple times this offseason that, you know, the Browns are still at least 3 years away, you know, and by that 3 years away from actually, you know, getting to where they want to be. So I don't think that losing is statically out of the picture for his mindset on how he expects the season to go. But, you know, if he really, you know, if that wasn't a smoke screen as far as what he said, and he really, you know, meant what he said, then, I could see him taking another season as long as he feels that, or taking another losing season as long as he feels that they're on track with what they wanted to do.
Okay. Well, the brownies, trying to shake and bake. I mean, do you think that these, overall, the Browns haven't really competed, really, I think, for real, for their division these past couple of years. Do you think that any of these change that y'all see any change happen immediately, or is this future?
I think what Tay said is right. They got a couple of years because, I mean, honestly, they have so many holes in areas that they need to fix that it's, I mean, even if they were to get like a franchise, if they would have got a franchise type quarterback, if you can't run the ball, you don't have receivers. I mean, it's so many different holes that they have. It's going to take a while, but that's what the whole bringing in the new, you know, the coaches, you got the GM, everybody trying to come together to build, it's going to take a while. But I think that they are headed on the right path to do that. I'm just curious to see how they draft this year, since they do have new people in.
Oh, okay. All right.
The smartest people.
I got you. So the draft order for the top 10 picks, the Los Angeles Rams, Philadelphia Eagles, San Diego Chargers, Dallas Cowboys at 4, Jaguars at 5, Ravens at 6, Rams at 7, Browns at 8, Bucks at 9, and the New York Football Giants at the 10th spot. I mean, I guess it's going to be, we'll see. Offseason is an ongoing thing for me. It's drama field always, I mean, for the NFL season. So I kind of like to sit back and enjoy basketball, speaking of which. NBA basketball annual awards, as with progression, a few of them have been released. The Kia NBA Sixth Man of the Year, Most Improved Player, and Defensive Player of the Year. Defensive Player of the Year, 2 years running, Kawhi Leonard, the first guard to do it 2 times in a row, I think, ever. I think that's the record for him. Second place to Draymond Green, and third place to Hawaiian Whiteside. The Sixth Man of the Year goes to Jamal Crawford this year. Second place, Andre Iguodala. Third place, Enes Kanter from the Thunder. I think that this went in either way, with Jamal Crawford like the I think Ryan was saying, man, make it look easy. He could pretty much win it every year.
Yeah.
I think my favorite one out of these ones was the Most Improved Player Award. CJ McCollum, the winner. Second place, Kemba Walker. Third place, Giannis Antetokounmpo. I think I said that right. CJ, the hometown kid, Canton, Ohio.
Yep.
That won it for the Zero. Kemba Walker coming in second place. He don't get as much, you know, that much talk around the league, but he's been steadily holding down that point position for the Hornets. And Giannis, obviously the Greek freak, Jason Kidd having him playing point guard. What y'all think about some of these awards, six man improved player and defensive player?
I think that was all valid, you know, winners. I definitely agree with all of them, honestly. I mean, they all definitely deserve them. That's the word I'm looking for. Especially, I want to go ahead and just give a quick shout-out to Meech, you know, in his absence. You know, he did predict the defensive player of the year. He did predict, I believe, the sixth man of the year. I think Ryan predicted, you know, the most improved. So, you know, I'll go ahead, you know, throughout here. The congratulations, you know, fellas, you know, good jobs on the picks. But, yeah, you know, I definitely think everybody who has won so far is definitely deserving of it. You know, I'm so happy that one bum from Miami. What's his name again? I don't know his name.
Sound Whiteside.
Whiteside.
Respect
yeah, that
his
dude,
name,
man.
Mike, when you mention
Crybaby. I don't respect crybabies, man. No, but I don't like the way he really handled that. I think that was a little just too much.
He is a crybaby a little bit, man. I be seeing him do a lot, man. He be extra out there, and I don't think he's one of those. I don't think he's one of those superstars. He's like a Dwight Howard, Andre Drummond. He really can't shoot that much. He really doesn't have post moves. He's just very, very athletic and very big, long. You know, that you can't really teach that. You can't teach athleticism and big like that. So that's why you're getting paid.
One of the things that I think, like, with that whole award thing, like we were saying, pretty much everybody deserves. I haven't seen anything, and I don't really foresee anybody getting any other awards where people are like, oh, somebody should have won other than this. So it seems like it's really good. I mean, the whole thing with the sixth man, though, the only problem I really have with the sixth man is that it's like you got people that come off the bench but are really starters. Like, I mean, they really play like starter minutes. So it's just like, yeah, you come off the bench, but you play like a starter, so your numbers are going to be, you know, really nice compared to, like, back in the day when it was like the sixth man of the year. It was really people who was literally just coming off the bench and making an impact. But now, like, even if you look at Jamal Crawford, if you look at even when Manu was winning with the Spurs, like, dude, you a star. You a franchise player. But you coming off the bench just because that you just fit that role. That's the only award that kind of just is like, I don't really like that award all like that. But I kind of can foresee, like, what's going to happen. It's like the same people because it's always a person that should be a starter that gets it. It's never really a true person that's just coming off the bench and is a sixth man that wins that award.
No, I'm going to say this because at the same time, when you really think about it, that if that person is that good coming off the bench, whether they was never a starter or whether they, you know, was a starter, they're going to be looked at as somebody who obviously can be a starter. Like, you're not going to see a sixth man, you know, who cannot possibly start the game because apparently, I mean, well, not apparently, but in my view, a sixth man is a guy who if one of your starters was out, he would be the next person that you would put in, you know, to be able to fulfill that role. So, I mean, I look at it as, you know, any sixth man that's come off the bench, obviously, and, you know, if he's worthy of the sixth man of the year, he's obviously that good of a player to be looked at as a starter, to almost be looked at as one of the franchise players on that team, if not, you know, another team. So I don't really see it as a big difference, really, you know, if, you know, if somebody who has started before or somebody who is really just that good, you know, on a starting five or not. So I agree with you, Ryan, but I disagree with you.
I get what you're saying. Like, the majority of the time when I'm talking about that is just like a sixth man that plays way more than the starter plays is what I'm kind of saying. Like, you really should be the starter then.
Hey, man, look at some of these votes. Look at some of these to the voting results. We got Dale Curry. You know, Dale Curry has a vote for these awards.